bet I get waves back there. I love that. My name is Janine, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 2nd, 2007. My sponsor is Letitia M., who's somewhere in this room. And there she is. And my home group is Battery Chargers, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. And I belong to a women's group. I would say my women's group is my home group, but it's got a much different feel. Every woman should belong to a women's group. Very nerve-wracking up here. I just want to say that out loud. I've always been an addict of some kind. A friend of mine says the variety pack, and I belong to that club. Mostly has been food throughout my life. And in 2002, I had the gastric bypass surgery, and so my addiction switched from food to alcohol. And it was in October 2002. And by August of 2003, I had it progressed so fast. I mean, so fast. Because when I do it right. And it progressed. In a 3-month period, I got a DUI 1 month. The next month, and the DUI was because my son refused to get in the car with me because I was drunk. And I blamed him for that in the beginning, too, yeah. the next one that I did was I totaled my car, ran into a wall at 2 o'clock in the morning because I was drunk, and the following month I was fired from my job. From that point on, there was a 7-day period I drank myself into oblivion until I called a friend and I said, I need to go to Kaiser. And she took me, and that was the beginning of my journey. I went to a recovery home in Riverside called Whiteside, and I was sober for 30 days, and I gave my counselor a lot of shit. And when she told me I had a will gone riot, I was very proud of that. I had a very strong will. Who doesn't want a strong will, you know? I was a very independent woman and had a family and a successful job until I lost it. And then, I got out of the recovery home. I went to my brother's, who was taking care of my son at the time, because he was still in high school, and bought my new car because I had totaled the other one. Drove down for the weekend back to my house. I lived at the time in Oceanside, but I was going to live back up there with my brother in Victorville to have family around and help me recover. I drove down on Friday with not only my son, but their boys, all 4 of them, and it was going to be a great weekend of packing and, you know, just having fun with kids. And I drank that weekend. And I called the recovery home. And I was crying. And I miss you guys. And I don't know if I could do this. I was already drunk. And, they even asked me on the phone, are you drinking? No, I'm just really upset. I don't think I could do this. And that was the beginning of my lying. And I stayed coming down the hill to Riverside to meet with these women that I went to a meeting with every Wednesday night. I went back to the recovery home once a week and to do like the alumni comes back with a meeting. For 2 years I did that, and I constantly lied about that I was sober. I told everybody I was sober. I didn't sponsor any women, thank God, but I did have a sponsor, and I always think I always thought that she didn't know I got one over on her. And not only was I a self-will gone riot, but I didn't believe anything would work in this AA program. I was too smart for it. I was too intellectual. And when I came in, I wanted to figure out what the hell was wrong with me, fix it, and then never have to come back again. Because if there's an answer, then you can fix it. That's just how life goes. That's not how life goes. And I continued to drink, continued to lie. I took a 1-year token. And people were so accepting and loving of me. I mean, they gave me presents. And one woman colored a poster of my life. And, boy, I tell you, I kept that lie. And then I moved down to San Diego because my previous boss, who fired me for alcoholism, was in touch with me. And I told her that I was sober for 2 years. I wasn't. And she hired me back. And with the premise that I had 2 years of sobriety. So I moved back down to San Diego, and I began to know all of you. Not literally all of you, but there's a lot of people in this room that I know. And I came down here, and the story that I told you guys when I went to Battery Chargers, when I went to the Wednesday night meeting, the women's meeting, any other meeting. I don't know why I'm drinking. I can't figure it out. I know I moved. And this is what you guys were saying to me. Well, you moved. You know, that's a big thing. You got a new job. Oh, going back to your job. That's a big thing. So, of course, it's understandable that you drank. And that guilt that I carried in my heart the whole time kept me relapsing over and over. And I would come back in these rooms. And Larry D. always said when he came in these rooms, he would look down. He would know the color of your shoes but not the color of your eyes. And that was me as well. I didn't know anybody, and I didn't think that I deserved to know anybody. I looked down all the time, and I didn't know how to stay in a room either. I didn't know how to stay in a room and get to know all of you, because that's what I was told to do, you know, get in touch with people. And it's really hard to get to know somebody when you're carrying, you're looking in their eyes and you're carrying a lie, and you're lying to these people, and they're really showing that they care about you. And one of my last drunks, I had some pretty amazing drunks, including my son one time, took everything, he was so sick of me drinking, and my son is 6'4", 300 pounds, he's a big guy, he would stand in my bedroom doorway, and I would just go at him and run at him, and I'd just bounce right back off on the bed, and he wouldn't let me out of the room. Well, one weekend he said, I can't take it anymore, Mom, I'm leaving, he'd left for the weekend, and he took my car keys, he took this big water bottle that I have of all the change. He took my wallet and every money I might have stashed in other places. He took money out of his room, his piggy bank, all that stuff he just took with him, put in his car. I had nothing except that I already had two bottles. And I was the one that only bought the little pints because I wasn't an alcoholic. If alcoholics buy the really big bottles. and so I had two of those bottles, but this was Saturday. And so I figured, oh, he'll be back on Sunday. I can, you know, get my stuff back then. Well, I couldn't last. I drank those two bottles that night. And this was 2006 at the end there, 2006. And I took a ring of mine. Just a one block away was a liquor store. I mean, one block. I don't have to drive anywhere. How easy can that be? And at first I was, you know, nervous. I didn't want them to know I was an alcoholic, you know, so I always buy all this other stuff in this liquor store plus a bottle. Oh, yeah, just give me one of those or two. And but when it got to the end, I didn't give a shit. I didn't care that he knew. I mean, I justified it like, he must know so many alcoholics. I'm just another one. Who cares? He doesn't care. My son once took down a picture of me and said, this is my mom. Don't sell her alcohol. And, you know, my son, God love him, but he just wanted to save my life. And he doesn't know. He, you know, this guy, he's going to sell me alcohol. This is his business. And so I was out of alcohol. Went down to that liquor store, and I took a piece of jewelry with me, a big, very big ring that I had. And it was expensive, and I went in there with my eyes down, and I just put it on the counter, and I said, please, just give me a bottle, and I'll, you know, you can have it. And he said, I'm not gonna keep it. You can give me the money later. And then, of course, I said, well, will you give me two then? Because it was an expensive ring. And he did. So when my son got back, this is New Year's Eve of 2006. When my son got back, he took a chair and he sat in the doorway of my room. And I was throwing a hissy fit in my room. He was on the phone with a friend of mine and telling her he doesn't know what to do with me. And she said, just stand guard. And so he did, and he sat in that doorway all night long, and I was crying and screaming and begging. And, you know, my son was 17 at the time, finished with high school, and he wouldn't move. I put my hand through a wall, and he wouldn't move. And I fell asleep that night finally, and I had the worst hallucinations ever in my life. I don't ever want to experience those again. And so what happened was then I went to my Wednesday night women's meeting, and I was scared shitless, and I thought for sure if I share this lie with them, they're so going to just kill me or just not want anything to do with me. And then I talked myself into, oh, no, that's not what they'll do. To my face, they'll tell me that night, oh, Janine, we understand, it's okay. But the next day I would see them. The next time I would see them at another meeting, I would be shunned. I would be poo-pooed. And I wasn't. And my sponsor, who wasn't my sponsor at the time, who's my sponsor now, said to me that we don't shoot our wounded. And I said we don't eat our young. And And it is true. And I not only was accepted, I mean, of course, I was bawling my eyes out. Most of the women are here tonight that I shared that with and have become really, really close friends to my heart. And that began my true sobriety, being truly honest. Is it over? Is it? Is that 10 minutes? Are you kidding me? I'm sorry, but you can't speak. I haven't even gotten to how I've been sober. My gosh. I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to talk for 10 minutes. Okay, the bottom line is this. I got sober. I let these women into my life because I told the truth and I shared. And then I became one of. And what I've learned in these AA rooms is that there is room for everybody. And I don't know how that's possible. I really don't, because there's a lot of fucking alcoholics. But there's always room, and we always make room. How is that possible? But we do, and I'm glad that I made it into these rooms, and I thank you for listening to me.